Well, these are two very different passages this morning, and for a long time I was actually drawn to the Old Testament story. There is so much going on there, but I decided to punt. And I felt that I would go with the New Testament story, because how can I go wrong preaching about I am the bread of life? So, how do we enter into this text? What do we say? What do we think? Well, let me ask you a question. How many of you have heard the old expression, the greatest thing since sliced bread? Right, most of you? Okay. How many of you know the origin of that saying? How many of you even care? Well, I'm going to tell you anyway. We take sliced bread for granted, right? You go to the co-op, you go to Price Chopper, and there are loaves and loaves of all sorts of bread, pre-sliced, ready to take home to be made into sandwiches. It's the way things are. But back in the 1930s, in the early 30s, sliced bread did not exist unless somebody took a loaf at home and cut it up. And then some bread manufacturers decided to experiment. And one of them came up with the slogan. And that bakery was Wonder Bread, right? And all of us know Wonder Bread. Many of us grew up with it in our houses. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, we had Wonder Bread with tuna fish. We had Wonder Bread with deli meat. We had Wonder Bread for grilled cheese. And occasionally, if we wanted to get funky, we had rye bread, which my dad brought home from New York City. Now, Wonder Bread was ubiquitous, and it was a signal moment in the history of bread. Whether it was a good one, we'll leave for another time. But bread has been part of the human story since the very first days. It was the cultivation of grain, the growing of wheat, that helped people move from being nomads to living in cities. We know that the Mesopotamians and the early Indians and the early Native Americans and the early Egyptians all had bread. We remember the importance bread played in the biblical story and how the Israelites fleeing Egypt didn't have enough time for their loaves to rise, and so they had unleavened bread. We know that bread was so important to the Romans that they conquered Egypt, which was the granary for the Mediterranean world. The Romans wanted to feed the people of the city, so the Egyptians lost their country. Bread keeps cropping up. Remember the French Revolution, 1789, the riots, storming the Bastille? Part of it was because people could not get bread. So it seems kind of anticlimactic that our entry into the history of bread has to do with cellophane and pre-packaging. But there we are, Wonder Bread. Bread also plays a role in the New Testament story. And if you were with us at church last week, you heard the story of the feeding of the 5,000 and how Jesus provided loaves and fishes for the great crowd. And they were so impressed and excited by what he did that they wanted to make him king. And Jesus had no interest in that. Jesus had not come to become a ruler in the political sense. So he left. Now the people who were gathered there went looking for him, out of a sense of expectation, perhaps entitlement. Because they saw this guy who could provide them with bread, and they thought, here's somebody who can do something for us. We're not going to let him out of our sight. So So they track him down on the other side of the lake. And they ask Jesus, where have you been? When did you leave us? And Jesus, as was his wont, did not provide an answer to the question they asked, but to the one that needed to be answered. You didn't come for me because of the signs I performed. You came for the bread I gave you. What Jesus was telling them was that they weren't interested in the meaning of his actions. They only wanted the stuff. Surface level was all that counted. They didn't want to go deep. Now, maybe this sounds kind of harsh, but let's give Jesus a credit here. He's engaging these people. He's trying to teach them. And so we're going to have this interesting dialogue going back and forth. Jesus tells them that they should work for the food that will last and not for that which perishes. That they should work for the food that the Son of Man will give you. And they ask a question. Okay, great. What kind of work should we do? Now remember, these were all Jews. And they were thinking in terms of the Hebrew Bible and the 613 commandments. And there were lots of things you needed to do as part of a faithful life. Jesus wants to reset their vision, give them a new perspective. And he tells them what you need to do for work is to believe in the one God sent. Now, Jesus here is beginning to get onto unfamiliar terrain. And the people ask him, okay, sounds interesting. What sign are you going to perform for us? Now, this is where I give Jesus a lot of credit. He didn't roll his eyes and say, how about yesterday? With all the loaves and fishes you were so excited about. He says, okay, keep going. What do you want? And they give him an example of a sign that had meaning for them. And they talk about their forefathers in the desert and how manna came down from heaven. That was a sign. Jesus takes their example and turns it on its head. He reminds them that it wasn't Moses who fed them. Moses was merely an instrument of the Lord. And then, looking at the Hebrew, he knows that the word natan can be seen in either the past or present tense. And they've been looking backwards, and Jesus wants them to focus on the now. So he says that God is giving you something. And it's not the manna that fell from heaven, but it is the bread of life. What is the bread of life? Jesus. And this is where Jesus really goes big. He says, I am the bread of life. It's the first time in John he uses that formulation. And we sang in the hymn some of the other formulations he used. I am the way and the truth and the life. I am the light. What was the big deal? Well, if you were in this crowd, you would have known the Hebrew Bible. And you had just spoken about a story that was recounted in Exodus. And perhaps your memory would have gone back to the time that Moses met God on the mountain in a burning bush. Do you remember what God said when Moses asked him, "What is your name?" "I am what I am." Jesus uses the same formulation, I am the bread of life. And here we see John's high Christology, in which Jesus is fully human and fully divine on display. You want the bread of life, folks. You want me. That's how you will know God. Now, it's very easy to go off on a rant about materialism or consumerism here. But the people who came out to hear Jesus were mainly Galilean peasants who had to work really hard to put food on their tables, to make sure there was a roof over their heads. And when people are struggling for food or a living, it can be difficult for them to focus on the spiritual. They can be distracted from God. And Jesus did not want that to happen. The loaf of bread might be nice, it might be important, but it wasn't going to provide comfort in times of loss. It wasn't going to provide support in troubled moments. It wasn't going to provide the companionship of the Lord through thick and thin. You and I, in some ways, are no different than the Galileans who listened to Jesus. We may have enough food on our tables, we may have homes, we may have other stuff we enjoy, jobs we find fulfilling, but we too can be distracted. We can be distracted by abundance. We can be distracted by other things. And we can lose sight that what we need isn't a bigger meal or more exotic food, but we need the bread of life, which is right here. Now, in a few minutes, we are going to celebrate communion. We're going to share together in the Lord's Supper. And in the Protestant tradition, we view this sacrament as a memorial, as a reminder of something that happened. We don't believe in transubstantiation. We don't believe that the bread and the juice are going to be transformed into the body and blood of Christ. We believe that we need to remember something that happened. And we think back to that night in the upper room, that Last Supper, and hopefully we will reflect on what took place that evening. We will remember a group of disciples, all of whom had flaws and failings, gathered together with Jesus to share in a meal. And we will remember that even on the night Jesus was betrayed, even on the night before he would confront Pilate, Jesus wasn't focused on himself and his own needs, but Jesus instead was focused on his friends and preparing them for the future. He knew that in their midst was Judas. He knew in their midst was Peter, one sinister, one who had feet of clay. But he didn't worry about what it was he, Jesus, wanted to do. He took care of his friends. Christianity, as I've said before, is something that cannot be done in isolation. It needs to be done with other people. Sometimes we may look for signs, and we may want them to be as big and bold as the feeding of the 5,000 or manna from heaven. But that's not the way God is working right now. But believe you me, God does provide signs. And I will be so bold as to suggest that each and every one of you is a sign to other people here. So you and you and you, you're signs. I'm even a sign. And we are reminders through an outstretched hand, through eyes that are paying attention, through ears that are hearing, to people who are in need of companionship or service or fellowship or someone with whom to pray, that the church is here. We are the body of Christ. Think about that. Each and every one of you is part of the body of Christ. And you have a role to play in making God's love known to other people. You also have a role to play in receiving that love from other people. Are you up to it? Am I up to it? It's kind of hard. And we're going to stumble along the way. But I can guarantee you this. Wonder Bread is real. It's just not the stuff you'll find in the grocery store. It's the meal that we're going to share here as Christians have done so for 2,000 years. Now, I didn't tell her I was going to say this, but I think Barb will let me reference a conversation we had right before worship, and that is that a former deacon had mentioned to her she can't believe how much time we spend working on and discussing communion in this church. And I have to confess that I thought about that. I've been your pastor for 8.5 years, and we have devoted a lot of time to how we celebrate communion, to what bread we use, to what is gluten-free, to what is not. Fortunately, we've not had a discussion about grape juice versus wine. We've talked about whether we'll do it by intention or by distribution. We try to meet both needs. And I don't know that we're ever going to satisfy every single person. But we won't stop talking about it because this sacrament is an important part of what we do as a Christian community. And we never want to take it for granted. And my hope is that no one ever sees it as just something that is added into the service that adds on 10 or 15 minutes before we can get out of here. If that's the case, we shouldn't be celebrating the Lord's Supper. This meal is a gift. And it's not my gift to share, and it is not yours. It is God's gift. One of the reasons we have an open communion table here is because of that. Because I don't believe, and I've arrived at this position after a lot of thought, that I or your deacons or the council has the authority to say who can come to the table and who cannot. That's Jesus' job. The reason kids can come up to the table is because they are as much children of God as we grown-ups. And sometimes adults have been known to say, well, kids don't really know what's going on. Let me ask you a question. Do any of us adults really know what's going on here? That is one of the mysteries and gifts of faith. So I invite all of you to come forward and to share in the bread and the cup. I don't care where you've come from or where you're going, how solid or shaky your faith is, but this is the bread of life. At this table, you will find Wonder Bread.